Hey everyone, James O'Bree from Dream Theater, and you're listening to or watching the podcast Talking Into Infinity with JT and Brian. And you guys are extremely informative. I love their dialogue. I love their interpretation of the songs, who and what we are, what we were going after. They're very accurate in their interpretations and descriptions, and I just think this is a great show, and these guys are doing a stand-up stellar job. So once again, enjoy Talking Into Infinity with JT and Brian.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Talking Into Infinity, a Dream Theater podcast. I am your host, John. We are live on Facebook, YouTube, talkingintoinfinity.com, and the CMSnetwork.com. You can find us at those four locations every other Thursday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you are watching on YouTube, don't forget to click that like and that subscribe button so that you are notified every time we go live. We do have a very special episode coming up on Saturday, June 25th at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so you do not want to miss that. If you would like to catch video replays of the show, just go to Heavy Metal Television. Make sure you're checking out Heavy Metal Television, or go to our YouTube channel. And if you would like to download audio versions of the podcast, just Google Talking Into Infinity Podcast, and we're on pretty much any platform you can possibly think of. Let me bring in my good friend Brian. What is going on, man? This is going to be a blast. Our first ever kind of off show. We're going to do a deep dive into a record that influenced the band. It's not a Dream Theater deep dive, but it is a deep dive into a band that heavily influenced them.
This is gonna be awesome, man. I can't wait to talk about Junkies Blues, Fear City Slide, and International Confrontation.
I think you got the wrong record there, dude.
The album cover back there, the greatest album by this band and the greatest concept album of all time, Operation Mindcrime 2 by Queensryche. So I'm excited to dive into this one. How about you, buddy?
You didn't wait too long to get into that one, did you?
Wait a minute. You're not doing that?
Your notes are all wrong.
Okay. Still kind of a cool background, I guess. I don't know what's going on there. No, could you actually, if someone played a song from Mindcrime 2, would you even know that that's what it was from? I would have no idea, I don't think.
I might from the production, because they tried to use all the old amps and the same equipment that they used for the original Mindcrime. And okay. So I think there was a certain sound to that record. I mean, I don't think it sounded like the first one.
All right.
But it did have a certain sound to it. So I think that might kind of give it away for me.
Yeah, because I was joking with these song titles. I didn't know any of them. I did actually buy this, and I remember listening to it for like 10 minutes and going, well, I kind of figured this is what was going to happen, but joking aside, man, the original Operation Mindcrime, wow, what a... So a little bit of backstory on me for Queensryche. I remember hearing, I think, Queen of the Reich on like a hard rock station in St. Louis that played metal at night, and then when the first The Warning came out, they played some of that, and then I remember I went and bought the cassette for Rage for Order, and I was like, I did not like it at all. I absolutely hated it. It was like a grower on me, and it's become one of my favorite albums now. And then I kind of forgot about the band, and all of a sudden 1988 rolls around. I'm in the record store, and I'm like, oh, the new Maiden's out. You know, we're going to go through that list pretty quick here. And I was like, all these albums are out, and all of a sudden I saw Queensryche, and you're looking at this album cover. And I don't know about you, but did you look at this and go, like, I have no idea what this is. It looked like a news, a news video cover or something.
Yeah, it was weird for me because I was gifted this album for my birthday, and it was I had like a group of friends, like the same group of friends all the way through, you know, grade school, middle school, high school, whatever, and one of them wanted to get me, he knew I was really into metal and music, and he just ended up picking this, and I was like, what the hell is this? Like, I hadn't even heard, you know, Eyes of a Stranger, and I was like, okay, so I was just like, I'll check this out. And man, I was like, I couldn't get past the first side of the record for the longest time because I just loved it so much. And eventually I was like, dude, there's two sides to this thing, you know? So that was my introduction to it. It wasn't anything I chose. It was just given to me.
So going back to 1988, now we knew that there was, just having briefly talked, that there was some killer albums that came out that year. But I specifically remember, like I said, when I had talked to you before, when this album came out, so Maiden, Seventh Son was out. OU 812.
Yes, yes, yes.
Metallica, Justice for All.
And yes, yes, yes.
I don't remember if that was already out at the time, but I remember I had a choice to make. I could not buy, this was basically my second year of the first time I was in college. And that's a long story. 8 years of college down the drain.
Forget it, he's rolling.
But yeah, it was just, you know, it was the heyday of metal. Like, I mean, so you're talking, you had South of Heaven, Slayer came out that year. Like we said, OU 812, Megadeth, Damn. So Far, So Good, So What. Two of my favorite albums of all time, Living Color, Vivid, great freaking album. Halloween, probably my favorite album by them, Keeper of Seven Keys Part 2. I've long said this is the best album Yngwie ever did. Odyssey, the one with Joel and Turner.
Okay.
Ozzy, No Rest for the Wicked. Rat, Reach for the Sky, kind of an underrated album.
Yeah.
An album I actually liked a lot, no one ever really talks about, Scorpion, Savage Amusement.
That's a great record, man. That's my favorite Scorpions album.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I love that record.
Okay, nice. And then the kind of the album that sort of started the sound for this band, Testament New Order, that sort of set the tone for kind of what they would end up becoming. But okay. Yeah, just a lot of killer albums that came out that year. And yeah, I just remember looking at this and I'm reading the song titles and I don't know, it was just a look of like, what is this? I didn't understand. I didn't know it was, I mean, obviously, I guess you figure it's a concept album, but I want to get into just real quick here too. The producer, Peter Collins. So very, very famous producer, worked long time with Rush, multiple Rush albums. Also obviously worked on Empire, other Queens record. I think here in the Now Frontier, Peter Collins, yeah. Here's the best one. 1994 Melrose Place, the music soundtrack. He was on that one.
So. Apparently he shot his load on Operation Mindcrime.
Yeah. No, but I mean, he's worked from everybody to Elton John, to Bon Jovi, to Brian Setzer, to Jewel. I mean, this guy's worked with everyone.
Right.
Here's one of the coolest ones I saw was the Mayfield 4, Second Skin. Are you familiar with that band?
I am not.
That is Miles Kennedy. That is his original band. And
no kidding.
I am curious to know, because you don't just bring in Peter Collins in 2001 for an album for, like, you know, 20 cents on the dollar. So they must have had some serious backing on that, you know, for that project to bring in a guy like Peter Collins. But yeah, what a sonic masterpiece. And I mean, I guess we're in agreement. Is this your, probably no doubt, the best Queensryche album?
Yeah. I mean, this is, for me, this is in my top three records. I think I've said before on the show, you know, that my top two and the two most influential records for me are Van Halen's 1984 and Justice for All, which, to answer your question, by the way, Queensryche was released on May 2nd. Operation Mindcrime was May 2nd of 88, and Injustice for All was September 7th. So they're only a couple months apart. But my number three is Operation Mindcrime. So yeah, this record for me is just, you know, I think we talked about it when we came up with the idea for the show. We were like, this is like a perfect record for me. And I absolutely love everything about it. So our buddy JG3 is chiming in. He says, you guys are bringing some much needed good vibes today. I've been sick with COVID the last 2 days. Pretty rough. That sucks, man. Well, glad we can bring a little bit of goodness to you. That's brutal, dude. It hits everybody different ways. Both my brothers got it. One of them said he's had a 2-day sniffle that was worse, and the other one was damn near hospitalized. So that was pretty crazy. Here we go. Be Cool or Be Podcast Out. Peter also did Rush's Counterparts and Test for Echo. I really like Test for Echo. People don't talk about that record a lot. I kind of dig it.
Yeah, he did my favorite one, Power Windows.
Okay.
Yeah, that was, I mean, that's really kind of a love-hate, you know, sort of relationship with that era of the band, those couple, three albums in a row there, where it's just so many, there's so many synthesizers and so much production going on, but I think it sounds killer. So I loved it.
Yeah. Well, oh, look at this. I did not know this either. K.O. McLeish, what's up, man? He says, also, the studio that Mind Crime was recorded in was where Dream Theater did When Dream and Day Unite. I, you know what? I think that was in the Lifting Shadows book, and I forgot that fact. Man, look at JG3. He's against me. I'm a big Rush fan, but I hate Test for Echo. I love Power Windows. All right, he's on your side.
Yeah. Test for Echo is kind of that's polarizing too. There's some people that love it and some that hate it.
I dig it. I mean, I'm not a huge Rush fan though, so I'm very uneducated on the band. But so yeah, why don't we jump into this, man? Like I say, we're gonna do these from time to time where we don't talk directly about Dream Theater, but talk about bands that influenced Dream Theater. And I would say that Queensryche is way high up on that list. Mike Portnoy had an inspiration corner that he set up while they were recording Scenes from a Memory, and he put up, you know, all of his favorite concept records, and this was one of them. And this record is just so easy for me to talk about because, again, it's my third favorite record of all time. I listened to it so many times this week, and I took some notes, but I realized I didn't really need a lot of notes. It's like, this song is good. This song is good.
It's going to be interesting how we go through this. I don't know.
I know. But, I mean, it's interesting to talk about, though, man, because, you know, I mean, to start, the thing that was fascinating to me is, like, if you listen to a lot of other stuff that came out in 1988, it had, like, thin production. It had that late 80s, like, tinny. You know, we just went through the Symphony X catalog, and that was, you know, weak and tinny. And this record is fat, and it grooves, and it's got a big, big sound. And, you know, especially in, like, the guitar tones, it's just not your typical late 80s heavy metal guitar tone. I mean, this thing sounds incredible. So I don't know if they had – I don't know if this is a case of, you know, they had a bunch of money to spend, which I don't – I can't imagine they did because this is what, their fourth record, and they hadn't really broken. So I don't know if it's a case of them actually getting money from the label because the label loved the concept, which I highly doubt, or if it's just a case of, you know, lightning in a bottle. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, that is a great question because I know Rage for Order did, like, okay, but, and there was a video for Gonna Get Close to You that was, you know, probably on Headbangers Ball and maybe made its way on MTV once in a while. But yeah, that's a good point. I never really thought about it, but yeah, the guitars, I mean, especially the guitars, I was reading somewhere too, because I was trying to clarify on, so they had switched to ESP at this point, and I mean, you just see, you remember those pictures of the two of Wilton and DeGarmo together and how killer those ESPs yep. looked, you know, and just on stage the way they just kind of just moved, you know, they didn't run around a lot, but they just, you know, they just play a lot of those harmony solos together, and they just, I don't know, it's just, on this album they just, they're able to just intertwine those guitars in and out. You never really know who's playing what. I don't think exactly. I mean, I know DeGarmo is like the chief writer, and he had a lot more to do with the writing, I believe, and composition and stuff. But yeah, this album sounds great. There's a lot of great, like, a lot of them kind of start out with a thumping bass, you know, with you got the bass kind of thumping on quarter notes, but it evolves into something a lot more progressive than that, even if the sort of the foundation is kind of those quarter notes with the bass thumping, because the guitars are just playing these just funky chords that you just don't hear, like, really in metal. And the way that those guys are able to pull it off was just, I don't know, it really is a sonic, like. So just to clarify, this was your first experience even listening to Queensryche?
Yes.
You had not even heard them before. Okay. So that's
I hadn't even heard of the band.
Okay.
So, I mean, I was 12 years old and I was like, what the hell is Queensryche? And, you know, I mean, I looked at the album cover and then, you know, the backs, you know, said Revolution Calling. And, you know, I'm like, what's Operation Mind Crime? I'm like, the song titles at least look cool. And honestly, like, again, it was a gift. So I was like, well, I have to listen to it. Like, I have to be polite to my buddy. Like, you know, and God bless it. I'll never forget, his name was Lee McKinney. And man, Lee McKinney, if you're out there, man, if you ever find this, thank you. Holy shit. Like, that's one hell of a gift, man. So
I had told you, so there was this guy that I went to school. It was this giant, like, 6'6" dude with basically blonde bowl haircut down to almost his eyes, you know, long in the back, right, with glasses the size of Coke bottles. Basically me if I had longer hair then. I'd switch the context at that point. But this dude, we used to call him the metal machine. This guy had like, I mean, we go over to his apartment, you know, on campus, and he had like every metal. Like, do you remember the band Candlemass? He was like the first guy to like listen to this Candlemass. I'm like, what the hell? Where do you even find this stuff? Right. So anyway, he's the one. He had bought Mindcrime, because I'm like, I can't buy both of these. So he let me record it. So I recorded it onto, you know, I had to have 45 minutes on each side to fit it on. So I about wore out that damn tape. I mean, I played thing just nonstop back and forth. And then, as I've told before, I was lucky enough to see the Justice tour with, you know, Reich opening. You know, the only thing was they really didn't play. I think they played Breaking the Silence, Mind Crime, and probably Can't Believe in Love. Maybe Eyes of a Stranger. I don't know if they played four songs, but because they opened anyway. So,
yeah.
So I didn't see the whole album then. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It just, I get goosebumps thinking about that time of music, you know, don't you? Like when you're like, man, it's so exciting and the albums are so good and you just couldn't wait to get to the store and see them. And
yep. I mean, you're not that much older than me, but I, like, my wife and I always talk, because she's 2 years older than I am. I'm 46 and she'll be, you know, she'll be 48 next month. And we always talk about how we were born a decade too late, because, you know, if I was born in 66, I'd have been 22 years old when this came out. And this is like, I mean, that era, like you said, I mean, all the stuff that was out in the mid to late 80s and early 90s was just absolutely killer. You know, I mean, now we go to shows and we're like, all right, we're going to skip the opening band, whatever, like, screw this. But that back then, you're like, I'm going to go see Metallica on the Justice tour and I'm going to catch Queensryche opening. That's huge. Absolutely huge.
Well, I remember Don't Believe in Love coming on the radio and people probably going, oh, you know, it was almost like, remember when Extreme got More Than Words played? You're like, oh, this is what they're, you know, or this song's about love, you know, all the songs in the album about love. Like, no, it's not really what this is about.
Nope. So Cam McLeish, we got a couple comments here. So Cam McLeish says, so if I've never listened to this album, let's see if you can sell it to me. All right. And, you know, this, you know, here we go. Robert Husted, he says, I listened to this album for the first time last week and I haven't been able to stop listening to it. Vocals are just amazing the entire time and just an amazing album all the way around. Yeah,
wow.
Man, Robert, I'm surprised you haven't listened to this, man. My brother-in-law, Andy, your brother-in-law, Andy. Man, he loves this record. He's a big Queensryche. I'm surprised you haven't been exposed to it before, but, yeah, Kale, we are going to attempt to sell this record to people that have never listened to it, and I think we'll do a damn good job. Right before we get started, I will say one thing in response to something that you said earlier. You had mentioned, like, you know, the song starting out with like a quarter note, like on the bass and stuff. One of my notes here is that I really think the bass lines, this is something I noticed in the last few days I never really listened to, the bass lines are very underrated. There's actually more going on there than I ever noticed. And when I really started listening for it, I was like, holy crap. And you know, just the bass tone itself is not a mid to late 80s bass tone. That is a fat sound, dude. Eddie Jackson has always had that kick-ass sound. And, man, this record just sounds great. It just sounds awesome. I mean, it really doesn't, like, a lot of those late 80s records and stuff, they're dated by the production. I don't think this one suffers from that. Do you?
No, and it's interesting because, looking at that list that we had of albums, I think most of those are pretty solid. The one that I thought had pretty lame production was the Megadeth, So Far So Good, So What. I hate the production on that.
That was pretty thin.
The Maiden, you know, the Maiden had solid, you know, the Van Halen's always decent. The Metallica was what it was. Yeah, you know, I mean, the Rat definitely has that 80s Rat, you know, sound. Yeah. That's what they mean. But yeah, the production on this, the bass sounds, but it's like, if you think the bass sounds good on this, man, when you get to Empire, like Della Brown and stuff, oh my God.
Yeah.
Those tones are just, I mean, if we don't know where they got the money for this, well, after this did so well, they must have spent triple that on Empire, because, you know, we'll probably save that for another episode maybe sometime, but, you know, the production and the bass and the tones on that, but we're here to talk about Mind Crime. Yeah, I mean, the bass sounds great, the drums sound great. I like too that you kind of get back to a more traditional metal, you know, sound, as you know, because Rage for Order was so far out there that, like, you know, that's a tough call to people. Like, okay, if I said you, here's your first Queensryche album, and I gave you Rage for Order, I don't know, you might make it past Walk to the Shadows in the second song, but I don't, you know, if you get the stuff like Neue Regel, which I think is amazing, and Screaming in Digital, I love, like, but I think those would be tough sells for a first time listener for Queensryche, don't you?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, I enjoy that record, but it's definitely weird. And that's why, when, you know, like you said, there's a video for Gonna Get Close to You, I'm like, why is it not Walking in the Shadows? Like, that's like a straight up rocker and everything. And then you get this weird, creepy stalker song. It's like, the hell is that? So,
well, it's such a horrible song title too, because you're like, oh boy, you know, this sounds like a song title from, you know, I don't know, Faster Pussycat or something. Right. Not that I don't like them, but you know what I mean? It just sounds like a bad 80s title. But sure. Yeah, I mean, the production on this is just, I mean, anytime there's like sound effects and things like going on, especially if you got your headphones, like, it doesn't sound like out of place. You know what I mean? It sounds like you're like right there. Like, it sounds like what's going on is going on in the studio or live or whatever you want to phrase it, you know?
Yep. Totally agree. So let's dig into this. Obviously the first couple tracks are, you know, it's kind of like the intro to the record. We've got I Remember Now and Anarchy X. So, you know, I Remember Now, like, I Remember Now. When that kicked in the first time I heard the record, I was like, what the hell is this? Like, it grabbed me immediately. And it, even though it's just a, you know, it's like a soundbite type of thing, man, does it set a tone. You're like, wait, what the hell's coming next? Like, what is this going to be all about? And then, you know, when the instrumental kicks in, you know, Anarchy X, it's like, it's majestic, and it's kind of like that, okay, something big is coming. Something big is coming. And, you know, and again, it also has that, ooh, what's coming next? Like, I mean, it's just, even though they're two little pieces, it really leads into the record really well, because you get an idea of the tone and the feel of the story that's going to come forward, and you get an idea of the songwriting and kind of the direction of the music, I think, right off the bat. What is your opinion on those two?
Oh yeah, I mean, it's you're right away, you're just kind of like freaked out, like, wait, what is going on here? What is this all about? I mean, how much do we want to delve into the concept here? Do we want to lay it out to what you think it is, or what we think it is, or it's easy to kind of look it up on Google, I guess, but
yeah, no, I mean, if you want to, I mean, it's always interesting to me, because it seems like, I mean, unless I'm just not digging into it enough, like, you know, because on Live Crime, it's like, what does he say? Like, anyone know what happened to Nikki? Oh, really? Looks like we have a difference of opinion. Like, I'm like, well, I thought he was like a dude who got mixed up with, you know, a kind of New World Order-ish thing. He's killing people. They got him hooked on drugs, and he falls in love with Mary, and, you know, they want him to kill her eventually, and he's like, ah, I can't do it. And then they go kill her. And, you know, I mean, like, some of that we'll get to later, because I really love the story aspects of it. But, you know, again, that first thing, you know, I remember now. I remember how it started. And, you know, just, I mean, it's, there's nothing there. There's like a couple sentences, and yet it just sets the table so well. You're like, what the hell, man?
Yeah, well, that nurse is kind of like evil sounding, you know, like the way she's like,
right?
Like, you know, something bad's going on here.
Right? Yep. 21/12/1974. Good to see you, man. He says, this album sounds good, but I wish it had the same sound as Empire. Yep. Well, I mean, dude, I mean, can't argue that. But, you know, for 1988, this thing sounds huge, at least to me. Be Cool or Be Podcast Out. I did forget to mention this. Gonna Get Close to You is actually a cover by a Canadian artist called Lisa Del Bello, who ironically did a vocal on one song on Alex Lifeson's Victor album in 1996.
Wow.
All right. Well, here we go. Robert Husted says, doesn't Mary kill herself because Dr. X told her to? Oh, looks like we have a difference of opinion here. Yeah, I don't know. Like, that, I've never looked it up, and I just, you know, I always assumed that they killed her because, you know, that he wouldn't do it or something, but maybe that's the case.
Yeah, I think it's kind of sort of long been discussed that it was likely suicide, but, you know.
Oh, well, then
it's up for interpretation, I believe.
Then I'm a goddamn moron and I didn't do my homework.
Well, no, I mean, he finds her dead and he doesn't really know, you know, doesn't know how it happened. But
yeah. All right. Well, I always thought that, you know, Dr. X and his, you know, other minions were like, all right, if you're not going to do it, we will. But what do
that
I know?
True. That does show, you know, they do say that. But
so,
but yeah, you get right into Revolution Calling, man. And it's like, boom, here's those harmony guitars that start off the song. It's just yep. like, I mean, it's just a darn, darn, darn. It's just, there's nothing amazing about that line or anything, but I don't know. It just rips right out of the, just tears right into your eardrum. Like, it just, those guitars are, I saw something online. It's like, the guitars are very bright. I think that's a good,
yeah.
Bright, and they sustain forever. Like, I mean, on every little, like, pinched harmonic and squawk, and it's like, they hold them out, and it just, I don't know, man. They're really emotional the way they detect those guitar parts.
Yeah. Well, and I think, as you know, the first actual song on the record, it's like you said, it kicks in with those awesome harmony guitars, and you know, it really it sets the tone for the rest of the record, in that, the you know, there's melody in every bit of this record. I mean, the vocals, the riffs, the bass lines have some melody to them. Like, the whole record, just, it's like you could sing along to so many different parts of this, and it starts right off the bat. And, you know, the beat is always just going. And, you know, Scott Rockenfield, I think, has always been like kind of an underrated drummer in that respect. Like, he's just got, he's a straight ahead rock, like power metal drummer, I suppose. But, man, it just works. And he's so in the pocket, and it grooves, and it's just awesome. And, you know, the chorus is fantastic. And that's something that we get throughout the record. And the thing that always, like, I've always thought this, it's like, you know, as an opening song, it really sets the bar high, and yet they exceed it and continue to exceed. I'm like, man, I mean, if you were to rank songs on the record, I mean, people could make a case that this would be like middle of the pack, maybe, if they wanted to. And that's really saying something, because this is a phenomenal song. So
you see the JG3, Jeff Tate's acting was better here than in Queensryche Cabaret. Is he talking? I don't know what he's. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we disagreed on that show at House of Blues. You said you hated it. I thought it was awesome.
Oh, man. When they did the whole acting thing with this, it was just. But then again, I mean, I'm also used to Operation Live Crime, which, yeah. If any of you guys have not seen or listened to Operation Live Crime, it's absolutely fantastic. I'm used to that. Like, they just get up there and they kill it. And I don't want to see some Broadway musical version of this. It's not, you know, it's, man, not a fan. But moving on, before we get negative, I guess we did find a negative to this record. They did that acting thing years and years later.
Well, that had to do with the original. Yeah.
But next we get into the song, the title track, Operation Mind Crime, which to me is, you know, even better than Revolution Calling. It's got that driving rhythm to it. And this is my absolute favorite Queensryche guitar solo. It's one of my favorite guitar solos of all time. And it actually probably shouldn't be a surprise, because it starts out pretty much the way the solo in The Test That Stumps Them All starts out, with the grabbing that one note. And, like, you know, yeah. I just love the sound of electric guitar. And when someone just goes, like in, yep. you know, Test That Stumps Them All. And this one just does that scream, that and the whole thing, like, I mean, the first part's Michael Wilton, and then DeGarmo does the second half, and oh my god, it's just so good. And then, you know, again, we were talking about the bass, and this has that, you know, do in the second parts of the verses, and it's just awesome.
Yeah, there's almost a funk feel to the bass sometimes in this song. Like, you know, I can't explain it. Like, and the other thing too, and you notice it on every song, but in this song, like, this is truly a rock opera. And I mean that in the sense of every lyric that he sings in the verse has melody to it. Whereas, yeah. like, a lot of metal albums, a lot of metal type albums, even progressive metal, they're singing notes on the verse. It's not necessarily as melodic, but this is all, I mean, these are just huge, giant melodies in the verses themselves. Like, I mean, this is just really well thought out and just so musical and, like, you know, that's why I'm saying the rock opera aspect to it. Like, whereas, like, you know, on stuff like, The Warning or something. Yeah, he's singing a ton of high notes on all that stuff, but it's not Nikki, there's, you know, it's not like doing all these like runs melodically that are, you know, coming back down to the chorus and stuff. And I don't know, it's just like every note has a purpose and a meaning behind it. And I mean, you know, you could say Jeff Tate like oversells or oversings, but I mean, everything he does on this is just, I mean, it's just all, it's gold.
Yeah. And the other thing about it is like the lyrics aren't cheesy. Like it tells a story, but it never delves into the realm of being cheesy. And a lot of concept albums have those cheesy parts because they have to just kind of shoehorn stuff in there for the sake of the story. And you never, ever get that with this album. You know, it stays on track. And even the parts that are super story driven, I mean, it all makes sense. And you don't have that cringe moment where you're like, yeah, I could have done something better there. And I love that. I mean, that's one of the fascinating things about this record is that, you know, you listen to it as a whole and it's awesome. But this record, some concept albums, a lot of them have songs that won't stand on their own. They have to be part of the collective. And Mind Crime is one of those that you could pull any one of these songs out and it's awesome. Like standalone, awesome. And that is just such a testament to the power of the material. And again, like I really wonder if this is just lightning in a bottle because everything on this record just hits and it works. And, you know, Kale McLeish wants to know, so do we have repetitive choruses or do these just hit the story-driven vocal sections?
Well,
I mean,
I don't know exactly what he means.
Yeah, I think you have to clarify that, Kale. But I mean, obviously the choruses do repeat. I mean, it's in a standard song structure.
Wait, do you say the same word in the chorus twice? Can you come back to it?
Yeah, clarify that for us, please, Kale, so we can answer you properly.
I thought Kale said he'd like listened to Mind Crime 2 before, or was that someone else?
I think that was somebody else.
Okay, sorry.
All right, so moving on, we have Speak. What are your thoughts on Speak?
I love Speak. Queensryche is one of the few bands that pull off muting those strings and getting that riff behind it, the mute, and the riff still comes through very, very full and fat, that do-do-do-do-do-do-do, you know, in the yep. intro and stuff and during the verse. Like, I don't know. There's a real art form to being able to do that. And
yes.
They pull that out here. Like, this is like a guitar, I don't want to say 80s metal, but this is like metal guitar 101, the way just every trick that these guys do on this album, like, you know, they mix it up here. They're going to do the mute here. They're going to do the harmonic here. They're going to hold out the chorus longer here. They've got this killer clean thing going behind this dirty thing. But yeah, Speak is just, that's just a driving rocker. I mean, you kind of had, like you said, I mean, I don't even know where it doesn't even really let up for like five songs here. It's just sort of a nonstop like assault, you know, starting with basically Revolution Calling for like,
yeah.
You know, well, it starts to slow down a little bit once we get the mission, but like you got like four songs in a row, just big, heavy, like just metal bangers really, you know?
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, I think, you know, the tempo kind of goes back and forth on the record. And this one obviously is, you know, like you said, it's like quick. It's that palm muting and stuff. And man, the song just goes, man. It's so, whew, man, it's so cool. It's, and another thing that they did on this one that I thought was interesting was you've got a couple songs in there, like the really high soaring vocals in the choruses. And this one does the opposite, you know, speak the word. It's got the low chant type of thing going on. So, you know, I thought it was really tasteful how they laid this album out to where once you've got something up tempo, then it's going to go to something more, you know, of a mid tempo. Once you've got something with all these high soaring vocals, they kind of bring it back down. Like it's real tasteful in the way it's presented. And I think this is the first evidence of that because this kind of breaks the mold of, Anarchy X and, you know, the two songs that precede Speak. So the presentation of the whole thing is just really cool too. So, you had mentioned earlier about the sound bites, and you know we've got that being, you know, like he's in the crowd like, hey, the son of me, you know. So it starts out with that. So, all right. So look, Kale's trying to provoke me. He says, I was trying to provoke you because I know one's great and one's terrible. Oh, my God. Kale, I'm going to ban you from the chat. All right. So Robert Ream says, speak, favorite song on the album. Really like those low vocals at the chorus. Yeah, that's exactly what I was talking about, man. It's like the high soaring stuff is really cool. But then you get something like this that's just, you know, it's totally different.
Even on this song, though, you've got the juxtaposition because you do have that, but then you've got the speak to me, where he's like doubling himself there with those parts going on top of the low part too at some point. And you're like,
yep,
I would love to just like been a fly on the wall just to see how many vocals they recorded on this. Like,
yeah,
I mean, sort of like a Def Leppard album. I haven't heard something that has this like just many insane vocal things going on.
Yeah, totally agree. And it kind of pissed me off. Like, I bought that, like, the special edition that they put out recently. Was it, like, the 25th or 30th, whatever anniversary, something or other. But I ended up buying it. And, I mean, it's great. There's a lot of stuff in there. But it says, like, you know, it's got, like, the documentary of Operation Mindcrime. I'm like, oh, sweet. So I'm ready for, like, an hour and a half, like, you know, studio stuff. And I'm spoiled by Dream Theater and everything. And it's like, 5 or 6 minutes long.
Yeah, like, I remember you saying that.
Oh, that pissed me off to no end.
Go ahead.
No, I was just, like, when I put the DVD in and I looked at the time on the track, I was like, are you kidding me right now? I couldn't believe it. And all it was really was like they were talking more about doing the videos, because if you've seen the video for, you know, the videos for the record, they're like that black and white and everything. They did that for pretty much the whole record, and it interspersed with, like, you know, movie footage of the story in a way, little snippets. And they more talked about that than actually doing the record and everything. And I was like, well, I don't care about the damn music videos. Tell me how the record was made. Like, what the hell, man?
So. I do want to say, as much as I love this album, okay, on Spotify alone, I don't know if you know this. So you have Apple Music, or you have something different, right? Amazon?
I have Amazon.
So on Spotify, there's Deluxe Edition, there's Remastered, there's Remastered Expanded.
Yep.
And there's the original, and there's Live Crime. So as much as I love this album, guys, okay, no more editions of this. We let's not beat this into the ground to the point of where, like, you know, and I understand, I guess they want to get, you know, new fans and new generations into it, but I think we've reached the saturation point.
Yeah. Kale McLeish says, I'm hoping it got bundled with the music videos. Yes, it did, Kale. It came with all the music videos, Operation Live Crime, obviously the remastered record, big like photo book and stuff with a little bit of information in it. But
how many videos did they end up having on this album? Do you remember? It was like 3 or 4. No, there's Eyes of a Stranger.
I Don't Believe in Love, I think. And I mean, they made videos for most of the tracks, if not all. If I remember, I meant to go back and watch that last night, but it was May the 4th, so I had a little bit of Star Wars stuff to take care of.
Way to get your Star Wars plug in there.
I had to, man. I got to, you know, I do have a Star Wars show called the Nerf Herder Council. It's a nerd podcast, so I had to, you know, do that for my Nerf Herder Council podcast, which is available wherever you find your podcasts. But
Happy Cinco de Mayo, by the way.
It's Revenge of the Fifth.
Come on May 5th or no?
By the way, real quick non sequitur here. We have a thumbs up on our podcast from Facebook from Wayne Joyner, and we have a crying face from one Eric Hendrickson.
Oh boy!
So your brother is trolling us. But yeah, one of those extended versions you mentioned, the record, it has like two live tracks, and one of the live tracks is Waiting for 22 in My Empty Room. I'm like, come on, seriously. Like, you're gonna give me that as like a bonus track? You can't give me like The Needle Lies or something, or Sweet Sister Mary, like.
Yeah, I hate the way he sings Waiting for 22. His lyrics are terrible.
Nice. So all right, so getting back into the track by track here, we're moving on to Spreading the Disease, and my note is, I don't have notes. This is just a kick-ass tune.
Yeah, this is when we find out the priest is a perv, apparently.
Yeah,
like, we didn't know that. Well, I don't even know if we knew there was a priest until now. I can't remember when he comes in, but yeah, we find out he's been doing some stuff with Mary. It's not too cool.
Not actually, very priestly
in the church itself. So yeah, I mean, a cool metal song, but you know, if you kind of strip back the lyrics, kind of disturbing. You know?
Yeah. Well, this is where the story kind of like expands. You know, you kind of start seeing a broader scope of what is going on. You know, you're like, what the hell? There's like a priest banging a homeless chick or something. Like, what is that? So, you know, you know, $25 a fuck and John's a happy man. So Mary was like an ex-prostitute or something. And you're just like, damn, what is going on here? It's like you're already sucked in because you're like, all right, what's going on with Nikki? Like, what's going on with the main character here? Like, he's, you know, he's got a gun and everything, and you know, he's yelling at people in a crowd or whatever it is in the soundbite, and then now we've got a priest and a prostitute. Like, ooh,
yeah, starts getting violent and disturbing quick.
Right, exactly. So, all right. So, The Mission is the next song. What are your thoughts on The Mission?
I love The Mission because we kind of mellow out here to start a little bit, because we've had these four or five just total metal bangers in a row, and you know, that acoustic guitar starts out and those strings and everything, and it's just, oh man, it's just a powerful. I'm trying to think of like two songs back to back on any album that I like more than The Mission and Sweet Sister Mary. Like, it's tough. I don't know. I feel like those two songs totally fit together too. Like, it's hard. Yeah. I mean, I know you said you could play any of these songs, but I feel like if you're going to play The Mission, you almost have to go into Sweet Sister Mary next. But man, yeah, the acoustic guitar is just haunting on that. And vocally, it's great. And I like how it's a, you know, we slowed down the tempo and stuff, and it's just a real grooving kind of a grinder, you know?
Yep. And I, you know, going back to the soundbite thing, you know, they just, man, they flesh out the record. It just, it keeps that creepy vibe going throughout the album. And, you know, if you weren't into this record by now, and then he starts out with, you know, blowing away a priest, you're like, what the hell am I listening to? You know?
Yep.
So, you know, it's got that awesome, you know, the fake televangelist, like, I want you to dig deep into your hearts and your pocketbooks and take his hand. Like, it's just, man, it's so good. And like you said, this is a total change of pace, and it's such a banging tune. And it, again, I love how you've gotten your ass kicked by, you know, you said like metal, the four metal bangers so far. And now all of a sudden, you know, they break it down. They drop it down into a totally different type of a vibe. And man, oh man.
Well, you know, this is metal 101, and it's coming up the next one too. But I mean, you get, you know, those kind of, I don't want to say evil sounding strings, but those just big symphonic, dark, you know, sounding type, you know, orchestra strings, and you put metal guitar and you put Tate's vocals behind it. I mean, that's just, you know, that's like hard rock gold metal 101 right there. I mean, that's always going to sound killer.
Yeah. And man, I think, you know, you make an excellent point that, you know, it fits perfectly with, you know, Sweet Sister Mary, the longest song on the record. I have kind of an analogy here. So to me, Sweet Sister Mary is the best song on the album, but it isn't my favorite song on the record. And I know that's kind of a weird thing, but it's like I used, and I swear I'm not, you know, doing this to promote my other show, but like when it comes to Star Wars, like my favorite Star Wars movie is Revenge of the Sith, but
they're for the podcast.
Yeah. But my favorite Star Wars movie is Revenge of the Sith, but I think the best Star Wars movie is Empire Strikes Back. So I think there's a difference between favorite and best. And, you know, for me, Sweet Sister Mary is the best song on the record. And, you know, we've talked about Dream Theater songs that are long, but you don't realize it's long because you're just along for the ride and you're super into what's being presented. And this is a perfect example of that, because it's over 10 minutes long and you're just so into the atmospheric nature of this thing, and you know, the rainstorm and stuff, and you know, you mentioned the acoustic guitar and The Mission, and this one's got that, and you know, the different parts, you know, the ins and outs and everything, and it's awesome, especially because you did start out the record with, you said, like four metal bangers, and now you've got this really progressive, you know, 10-minute epic tune to end the first side of the record.
You know, what's funny about this one is I remember when seeing how long this was originally before I'd actually listened to the tape and stuff. And I was skeptical because, like, I'm trying to set the tone. So basically my epic song existence to this point was Rime of the Ancient Mariner, right? Maiden.
Yeah, I love that
probably,
song.
Probably Xanadu and Camera Eye from Rush. Orion, maybe Metallica. And, you know, possibly my second all-time favorite song from Queensryche, Roads to Madness.
Okay.
So I was like, oh boy, you know, I just didn't have a lot of experience listening to 10, 11 minute songs, you know, so I was kind of skeptical, but I remember first time I heard it, man, it was just, wow. It's just,
yeah. Yeah. Again, like my only exposure to long songs was, you know, the song And Justice for All, and then To Live Is to Die. And, you know, those, you know, they're big, just big, long, massive slabs of metal. And, you know, you're in for this big ass ride. And they're great, but they do, you know, that it's long, you feel that it's long. This one doesn't. And even when I was younger and I didn't have the attention span that I do now, like, I never noticed it. It was just, you know, I mean, granted, it's probably because I didn't pay attention to the track listing very much at all, because to me, it was one cohesive thing.
Well, the other cool element we forgot too is that, you know, we've talked about this doing the Symphony X. You get the gigantic Latin, you know, choir chants. You know,
yeah,
you know, it sounds like coming from the Omi and Damian. You know, like,
yep.
You get all that choir stuff going in with the symphony, you know, with the strings and all that behind it. And I mean, it's the song. It's just such an eerie, the way it starts out. I mean, it just, it almost makes a hair on the back of your neck stand up when you're listening to it in headphones. You're like, man, what is this going, you know? And then it just gets super heavy, and you know, the message about, you know, how desperate she is and he is, and what's going on, and how do I get out of this, and what's right and wrong, and he's been duped and all this, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and it's also, you know, I don't know how it lays out on vinyl, but, you know, I had the cassette, and this ends side one, and you want to talk about a kick-ass way to end, you know, the first half of a record. It's like the perfect way to, like, cut the story in half. And so, I mean, you got that aspect of it as well. So, Kale McLeish asks, okay, I just had a look. Why is this spelled as Sweet Sister Mary, S-U-I-T-E, instead of S-W-E-E-T, Sweet Sister Mary? Is this a multi-parter? I've wondered that too, Kale.
I think it's a musical sort of, not necessarily a pun, but, you know, it's like her, it's the song or the suite about her, you know, the orchestral suite about her. Yep. That's sort of always the way I've.
21-12-1974 has a question for you. What? No 21-12?
That song has so many different parts to it. It's, yes, I mean, that's an amazingly long song. I mean, that's almost a concept album, and it is a concept album in itself. I mean, there's
isn't
so
that
many...
Isn't that more like the Six Degrees suite?
Yeah, I guess sort of similar. But yeah, there's so many different parts, whereas, like, you know, Sweet Sister Mary has like two or three main parts and they all come back together, whereas 2112 is kind of a bunch of songs, you know.
Okay.
But that's why I didn't pick that. That's why I used the other references.
Okay, makes sense. All right, you are up, man. The beginning of side two, The Needle Lies.
Almost like a punk song in a way, you know, like this was one that, I don't know, this was, I guess I would say, it's hard to say your least favorite. The riff on this, I think, is not as great as everything else, but I love the chorus and stuff, and it's grown on me more, but I always kind of got, I don't know. I mean, the worst thing about Sweet Sister Mary is when you get to the end, it's over. And you're like, wait a minute, I just want to go back and hear that one again.
Right.
So kind of like almost whatever they put here was going to be, you know, but yeah, I kind of almost get a sort of a punk feel from this a little bit, but, you know, it's just a real up-tempo metal thing. They're trying to get back to, you know, kind of banging away after we mellowed out there for, geez, I don't know what, probably close to 17, 18 minutes with those two songs.
Yep. Yeah, I think the cool thing about this one is that, you know, it's again, it you know, Sweet Sister Mary ends side one in such a cool way, and then side two opens with The Needle Lies, and it immediately just picks up, and you know, the sound bite just completely matches, you know, the mood of the song. It's frustrated, it's furious. He's like, I've had enough, and I want out. And it's super quick and everything, and it's just totally metal, and it's a great way, like you said, you've mellowed out for however long with, you know, Sweet Sister Mary and The Mission, and now it's time to get back to kicking your ass. But again, you know, the way that they kind of tailor the music to the story and what's going on, I think is really fascinating, because some concept records don't do that. It's just, you know, the story's on top of the music, and I've heard records that don't really match the vibe of what's going on in the story at that particular point to the music that's going on underneath it. I mean, that's not common, I don't think, but I've heard it. And this definitely is not an example of that, because this is just a frenetic, you know, it's just an absolutely frenetic song. And it's kind of, you know, Nicky's mood at the time. You know, he's like, I'm sick of this shit, you know. So you asked me in the private chat, I'll bring this up in public, so you actually had the vinyl. No, I didn't have the vinyl as a kid. I have it now.
Okay.
So I love this record so much that I bought the remastered vinyl, and then I bought the box set, which is CD. So I've got both versions of it sitting up on my shelf over there. And I collect vinyl just on the records I like. I'm not like I get everything on vinyl. And I keep them sealed. So I haven't opened it to see you know, what it looks like in there or anything. But yeah, I do have it. I just haven't opened it. So
okay.
So moving on, we have Electric Requiem, which of course is kind of like a lead-in track. And here's where the controversy comes in that we talked about at the beginning of the show. Did she kill herself, or did Dr. X kill her? What happened to Mary?
You know, the interesting about this little snippet is it sounds exactly like it was recorded during Rage for Order. Like, it has that sound, that vibe, that feel to it, which is
yes,
kind of weird, because you're like, hey, did you guys, you know, you're almost wondering away, like, was this brewing when you finished Rage for Order? Like, did you go in and do a couple weird things like this and then to come up with this idea? But yeah, you know, it's not really a song, I guess, per se, but it's sort of like continuing the story on. And but yeah, it definitely almost feels like Going to Get Close to You or something off of Rage for Order, the way it's sonically.
What if Operation Mindcrime was nothing but unused songs from Rage for Order? Like, that's not good enough. We're going to use these other ones.
that would be the ultimate B-side album creation, I guess, if that was the case.
they're like, the label's just rushing them. Like, you have to have an album out in the next like month. And they're like, they're like, ah, shit. So they go back and just pull out all the unused stuff from Rage, and they listen to the record at the end and go, well, I'll be damned.
Yeah, so, I don't know as good as a band that they are. That would be something.
Yeah. One of the interesting things that I always found about Electric Requiem, if I could pronounce it properly, you know, like you said, it's just kind of like a segue song. It's just like a little whatever, kind of has a very Rage for Order-ish feel. But it definitely sets up the vibe of the last part of the record. You know, there's that kind of like sadness, I guess, so that longing for Mary that kind of permeates the stuff that comes after. And it's set up, you know, even in death, you still look sad, you know. And again, it's just this record is put together brilliantly. And when I was listening to it the last few days, that really hit me. It's almost like chapters in a way. And, you know, this is like the start to the final chapter. So I think it's pretty cool for that reason. It does lead into Breaking the Silence. And, man, this last bunch of songs are just absolute classics, I think.
Yeah, I don't know what to say. It's kind of like, I don't know what do you say about these, like... Yeah, you know, kind of go back to your point about, well, you know, you can play every one of these separate if you want. The problem with that is you're going to run into what we ran into with the Dream Theater. Like, all right, if you're going to play Break in the Silence, you better be ready to go into, you know, I Don't Believe in Love right after that. Otherwise, everyone's going to be mad.
Yeah, exactly. play it. Oh, damn it.
Which is what happened with Six Degrees when we got that tease, you know, of that.
Oh. We got Ministry of Lost Souls after About to Crash. Yeah. Oh, it's our buddy Joseph Wren, man. Discuss Metal Joe. What's up, guys? Great album, by the way. Yes. Totally agree, man. Good to see you, buddy. Hope you're doing well. And my buddy from Lima, Stephen Engel, says, Breaking the Silence is my favorite track. Hard to argue with that, man. It's a record full of incredible songs, and this is definitely way up there for me, too.
I love the You Never Answer Me, and then that guitar does one of those, you know, swell, you know, bend sing outs that we talk about. It holds that for like, I don't know, 9-12 seconds, or I don't know, just totally makes the song, those little things like that.
Yep. Stephen Engel, he's getting technical with us. He says, the palm muted semi-chromatic lick in the solo to this day is one of my favorite bits of a guitar solo. I'm terrible at the tech talk with that, like the extra musician speaks, Steven, so I will leave that to you. I will completely believe you that that's what it is. So
I'm trying to think of the solo in that one, but yeah, I mean, we've said before, they're like masters at the palm muting stuff.
Yeah, and it's funny, you mentioned the, you know, you never answer. The guitar does it too. Like, it's like, you never answer. And the guy goes, like right after it. So I, you know, that's another really cool aspect to it. And, you know, it's like, again, like, it just evokes such a feel of him just wandering the streets, you know, strung out. And God, it's just, again, the atmosphere of this record is so cool. You're just so sucked into it. And this song is another perfect example of that for me. And it does lead into my all-time favorite Queensryche song, I Don't Believe in Love. Is there anybody here in Madison, Wisconsin who believes in love? I don't.
Is that from the Live Crime? Or?
Yeah, yeah. this song just rules start to finish. It's not just Queensryche, but all time. It's one of my all-time favorite guitar riffs. Oh, my God, that riff is just so cool. And I never, you know what I never realized is that the it's actually like a variation on the vocal melody in the chorus, and I never noticed that until literally today. And I'm like, what the hell have I been listening to all these years? It's like I listen to this song above any other Queensryche song. I love this track. Like, I just noticed that.
There's only one other pair of songs that created such a conundrum in my life, because I don't know how many years ago it was, The Darkness. They did believe in a thing called love. But I was taught not to believe in love. And
damn you, darkness. Right. My belief structure has been shattered.
Right. So the other example was Brian Adams, One Night Love Affair. You know, I don't know how many years later, Bad Company said One Night Ain't No Love Affair. And it was like, I think literally 2 years later after they got Brian Howe in the band. So I'm like, well, which is it? Is it One Night is a Love Affair, or One Night Ain't No Love Affair? So anyway, I was left with the same massive confusion during these two songs.
I'm so confused.
Yeah, I don't, you know, because I didn't think I believed in love. And then like Justin Hawkins in The Darkness says they believe in think called love. So there we are.
Of all things to bring to the table for this song, and that's what you have.
Yeah. No, I mean, great song. Like we said, I probably should have saved that point that I used earlier, but I'll go back to it. Like, this was the song that was played on the radio when this came out, and you're like, okay, this isn't really I mean, there's songs on here that sound like this, but this is not what the band is about, you know. I mean, it was an obvious choice to play on the radio at that time, but you know, people that just like probably picked it up and thought they were going to hear seven I Don't Believe in Loves in a row on this, you know, album or whatever, were probably going, what is this, you know?
Really? See, I mean, don't you think that they're, well, man, I don't know. I think, you know, this is a progressive record, but I think that I think there are a lot of songs that are kind of like this. It's a little, you know, I mean, if you're looking
there's
at
probably
stuff,
more, there's probably more than I'm thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I thought this was pretty straightforward, and some of the other stuff is kind of straightforward. I don't think it's too much of an outlier. I mean,
I guess I'll go back to my point about, you know, it's not just a song. It doesn't stand alone. Like, it's part of this whole story. You know what I mean? Like, people are going to kind of miss the point of it if you just hear the single or whatever and don't hear. Does that make sense? Or should I just shut up? I'm going to mute myself. Go ahead, Jim.
And Brian bails on his own take first for talking into infinity. I think it fits in nicely. I mean, if you're referencing the story, you know, I don't think this one is overly. I guess it is kind of story. Like, it told me to run, but just how far? So, yeah. Well, no, I think it's ambiguous enough to stand alone on its stand alone
it,
as a song.
It stands alone, but what I'm saying is, like, if you just heard this on the radio and didn't know anything else about Queensryche, you know, I think you would just think this was a song about some dude that doesn't believe in love.
What if that's all it is?
Which I don't know why anyone cares. I'm going to mute myself again. Go ahead, John.
Man, Brian, you are just crapping all over this great song. What is wrong with you tonight?
No, I love this song. I was trying to make, I don't know, just go on to the next song.
He's like, fuck
me. I think you know the point I'm trying to make. It's just, maybe it's not a great point or it's not making sense.
Maybe I'm just not agreeing with it. I don't know. I, you know, could be. Joseph Friend, Discuss Metal Joe. You know, he goes back to something we said earlier. He's not wrong. He says, in the history of thick guitar tones, this album has one of my favorite 80s one guy, but he's doubled tones of all time. And Brian, keep believing in love and the darkness. Brian May did.
Nice.
All right. So now we get to what might quite possibly be. Well, actually, not yet. I did almost skip. We have Waiting for 22 and My Empty Room, which is, you know, he's caught. And Nicky's caught. At least that's what I get off of it. But yeah, he's, you know, he's stuck and everything's kind of come to a head and not much to say here. It's, you know, it's kind of cool.
I love that. It's a killer clean riff, that droning solo, you know, yeah. It's got that sort of echoing back and forth guitar things, you know, it's just real haunting and like,
yeah.
Introspective, you know. I mean, it, you know, it's a short little thing, but a really cool piece of music.
Yeah, to me, this is like where I take a breath. I'm like, "Whew, man, what was all that?" So it's kind of, you know, this is like a breather for me. And again, I think it annoys me because one of the extended versions has two live tracks, and these two are one of them. Like, damn you. So,
all right, Kale, seriously, so is this about a guy who only secretly believes in love or not?
that's the real crux of the story. We're not worried about Nikki and Mary and the priest and Dr. X and all that kind of stuff. We're trying to figure out if somebody actually believes in love or if they don't.
Ooh, Robert Reams cage match suggestion. He says, oh. Operation Mindcrime versus Metropolis Part 2, which wins?
Operation Mindcrime. I love Metropolis. I love it. I love it. I love it. But Mindcrime is just one of those albums that has emotional significance for me, and it's absolutely just perfect throughout. And the vibe.
Is it in the song or the album?
Well, obviously the album.
Oh, okay.
Why would you do a cage match song versus song?
They said Metropolis Part 2. So.
That's our next episode. We are going to do Waiting for Sleep versus Along for the Ride, the cage match. stick with us as we battle two Dream Theater ballads against each other for an hour.
Dedicated to chaos versus...
Oh, God.
Vacant.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean... man. So Sarcasmo Asolio 420. Evening. Does Johnny Depp listen to Dream Theater? Oh my Lord. So yeah, so waiting for 22 in My Empty Room. leads into what I would argue might be the greatest album closer of all time, Eyes of a Stranger. That it's always amazing to me that, like, the song that really broke them and that turned out to be the big single from this record was the final track. I can't think of another record like that where, you know, you get to the very end of the record and that's what, like, really blew up a band, like, you know, on the radio and everything for a particular album. I can't think of anything else. Can you?
Not offhand. No, I suppose if we, like, really researched it, but yeah, no, I mean, it is weird. Was this the second single, we think?
I thought it was.
I think it was.
I really think it was. And because, and they were basically like, if I'm remembering the story correctly, they basically put out I Don't Believe in Love and Nothing Really Happened. And they were almost going to be done with, you know, the cycle on the record, and it's like, okay, nothing's happening with this album, and they decided to put out, you know, Eyes of a Stranger, and all of a sudden all hell broke loose. So it really just, I mean, changed the fortunes of the band, really.
Yeah, I mean, I had in my notes that is this the greatest song, album closing song, because it closes a ridiculously cool concept album also. I mean, when those overhead, like the doctor, you know, Dr. Davis, you know, and you hear like the footsteps, and, you know, and then you hear the guitars kind of slowly starts to droning, and then you get into those circular riffs that they start in the main riff. It just, I don't know, man. That's one of those songs. I just, every time you hear it, you're just like, oh man, this is awesome.
The only question whenever you hear this is, do I turn it up or do I not? Like,
yeah.
Even if you're in a place where you can't really turn it up, you got to turn it up a little bit. You're like, oh man, Eyes of a Stranger.
My only beef with the song is it's not with the song itself, but the current version of the band, like, has tried some acoustic things with this. I don't think it works for that song. I don't know if you heard those, but I thought they were.
I have not.
Yeah, it. Maybe if they were redone a different way, but the way they're out there on YouTube, they've done like some pre-show, I don't know, whatever promo things somewhere, like in a record store or in a club or whatever, and it's just the singer and guitar player, you know, from the current version, but this one doesn't work acoustically. I'm sorry.
Okay. I mean, I saw Jeff Tate acoustic with his full band a few years back, and he did a couple songs off this record, and this was one of them. And I mean, with a full band, it was kind of cool, but I mean, you kind of need that layering.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think, you know, as much as these are phenomenal songs, I don't think they're songs that break down into that, you know, singer-songwriter type of vibe. Because there's just too much going on that you would miss, you know?
Ooh, Metal Joe. Does Cherry Pie count since it was the last song they recorded and had nothing to do with Uncle Tom's Cabin?
I'm really not familiar with Warrant, so I'm out. I know, yes. I know Uncle Tom's Cabin kicks ass. I know that. So, yeah.
Is Cherry Pie the last song on the album? It must be. I thought
it was the first.
No. Well, it's either the first or the last. Well, he says it's the last song they recorded, so I don't know what that means.
Nah, Joe, I'm talking about like last on the record. So, you know, to close it out though, I mean, it's a perfect guitar solo, it's a perfect song, it's a perfect album closer. And then you got that fade in, like, I remember now. Like, it's the whole thing just comes full circle. And, you know, it's to end on that song is just phenomenal because the whole record is so damn good. And you want to talk about a record that just leaves you wanting more. The hype that this must have built for Empire among people that were fans of the band must have been just enormous. That they're like, holy crap, you know, what's coming next? And, you know, thank goodness, you know, Empire is a pretty damn good follow-up. I mean.
Well, and they kind of continued into this sort of political thing, too, because Empire's, you know, basically all about the same thing, you know, the media and the rich controlling and the 1%, you know, rules yep. America and this and that. And it kind of followed this. I mean, you know, it's not like an insanely unique concept that they came up with, but it's very, I mean, it's very plausible. It's stuff that probably does happen and happens in other, you know, in other countries and can happen here too. You know, I mean, there's a lot of subversive organizations that could just take over things and stuff goes on behind the scenes and people are just made to be puppets. And, you know, we don't want to turn into a political show, but I mean, you see this stuff all over. It's very applicable to today, to what's going on in the world, honestly.
I was thinking that, like, you kind of listened to it back in the day. Like I say, I was 12 years old and you're like, oh, this is just a story. But now you've heard stories of things like this kind of going on since then. You're like, holy crap.
Yeah.
Like, wow. All right. Well, okay. So that's, whew. Yeah. You know, overall, man, I think, you know, this album is just, man, it's what makes it is that not only is the story really cool, but again, it's one of those records where the music just backs it up like 100, 150%. I mean, all of these songs could stand on their own. And some of them are more story driven, so you'd be like, what the hell is he talking about? But they're all great individually and could be released as a single, I think, most of them. And the atmospheric stuff that they do with the sound bites, they're perfectly placed and they just push everything along. To it's like, you know, you kind of go, oh man, that song kicks ass. Ooh, wait, what's going on with the story? What do you say? You know what's happening? Like it's so it just pulls you in and doesn't let go. To this day, I absolutely love this record, man. It's like, it has never changed for me. I just absolutely love it.
Yeah, no, this one never gets old. I mean, and it's cool to see when you know a band's in their prime and you can tell that everyone's kind of on the same page and it's all just sort of just kind of comes together, you know, like it's hard to imagine that, you know, obviously later years, bands always grow apart. It almost always happens no matter what. But like, you know, even being fairly young still at the time and able to pull this all together, you know, you'd have to be pretty tight knit as songwriters and band members to pull something like this off. Because if you all hated each other, it would be yeah. pretty rough, I think, to pull off something of this magnitude.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, as we discussed, this is their fourth record and they hadn't really hit. You know, I mean, they had the EP or whatever, but so I think there, you know, there's a certain amount of desperation that had to have been, you know, gone into this record. It's like, this is kind of, if this doesn't work, then nothing's going to work. So in that respect, it's also kind of a ballsy move. You know, I think, you know, it kind of mirrors the whole Scenes from a Memory thing when Portnoy was like, you know, told the label, just piss off, like, we're going to do it on our own. And instead of trying to put out, you know, Images and Words Part 2, he goes and does this massive concept record and just takes like the ultimate chance at right at the point where it's completely sink or swim. And, you know, Queensryche did that, you know, a decade earlier with Mind Crime. And it's a fascinating decision. And again, there's so many nuances to this. I can't believe that there's not. Somebody hasn't done like a documentary or written a book about just on this record. There's so much there. And, you know, explaining the story and speaking of the story, Cale says, to answer the question asked earlier about Mary's fate, it's revealed in one of the live DVDs that Mary did, in fact, kill herself because Dr. X threatened to kill Nikki if she didn't. All right. Well, so there's that. Thank you for clearing that up. So no ambiguity there anymore. Yeah, JG3, he makes a good point here. It's wild how good of a guitarist Chris DeGarmo was, and since he left Queensryche, he's basically retired from music. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, all he did was the only thing I can think of off the top of my head is I know he did the Jerry Cantrell tour. I think I don't remember if he was on the album or not, but he did some stuff with Jerry Cantrell's solo work.
Well, we've said before, once he left the band, the writing was, you know. The songwriting took a ginormous downward spiral, to put it mildly, I guess.
Well, he was still there for Here in the Now Frontier, so
I still give him a pass on that. Like, it was nowhere near as what would come later. You know?
I would disagree. It was all shit. No, I mean, it's so weird with this band, with Queensryche, because, you know, whenever they come around on tour, I will always go see them. And I never did with Tate, because I just knew they're going to play all that other he's going to ramrod the crap Queensryche down people's throats. You know, he's got that artistic thing he's interested in. And I'm like, I don't want to hear that shit. And so when they got Latory in the band and they're like, yeah, we're celebrating classic Queensryche, I'm like, thank God. So now you go to Queensryche, you get nothing. You get the new Latory records. You get a couple of those songs, but you get nothing past Promised Land. It's like, oh, thank God. Like,
yeah.
You don't have to hear Frequency Unknown or, you know, American Soldier or Tribe or anything like that. You're like, keep that. Just go away. Like, stop.
Like, my dream. What would be your dream, like, re-recorded album? So I would love to hear The Warning re-recorded, I guess, with probably Todd Latory singing it, but with all the other original members, or Tate singing it, either way. But I want it re-recorded, but I don't want it to sound like too modern. You know what I mean? Like, I just want the quality to be way better than the actual recording is now.
Do I have to pick a Queensryche record?
No, just pick one. Pick an album.
Man, that's a tough one, because I there's a lot of records I listen to, and I think, man, if this was just bigger and fatter, like, man, that I would really have to think about that. I'm trying to get into that 80s, early 90s headspace of albums that I love that I'm just like, I mean, the obvious one is, you know, throw some bass guitar on Injustice for All and let's roll. Like, I mean, that's the obvious one.
Well, I'd even say from this same year we talked about, So Far, So Good, So What, like, I'd love to hear that. Like,
yeah,
I think the songs on there are decent enough to, they would warrant re-recording, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if you took, like, the production from something like Endgame or Dystopia, I mean, those records sound fat, dude. So, I mean, if you're just going to keep Megadeth with Megadeth, like, that would be a good choice.
Or even just get us up to Peace Sells level. Like, I love the sound of Peace Sells.
Yeah, even that's a little thin. But God damn, that's a really, really tough question. I keep trying to think of, like, a Van Halen record, because that's my favorite band, and I'm like, no, I'm fine.
Here's an interesting one. Kale says the first two Maiden albums put Bruce on the vocals.
Oh, that's a good call, Kale. That's a good call. That, yeah. All right. I mean, JG3 brings up an obvious one. When Dream and Day Unite, easy. Yeah, I mean, if you were to do When Dream and Day Unite with, I mean, if you want to just say Images and Words production, you can go there. But, you know, the Six Degrees production is kick-ass. Distance Over Time has great production. And, you know, put James up there, you know.
My only problem with that one is the songs are kind of sort of all over the place. So, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, the obvious staples of, like, Fortune and Lies, yeah, I'd like to hear that with a little better production. But the other songs are so kind of, you know, like, I don't know. You understand what I'm saying? Or am I?
Yeah, no, I totally get it. I mean, you know where I stand on this record. I think When Dream and Day Unite is awesome. I think it's really, really cool.
So I guess my point is, if you, since the songs are so, all kind of so different, if you do new production on them, what's that? I don't know. That's a little tricky for me, but I mean, I get why people would say that.
Well, I mean, it gets difficult because you have to do it, like, note for note, kind of like when, you know, Def Leppard, they weren't going to put their stuff out on the digital platforms, and so they decided that they redid Pour Some Sugar on Me, and basically did it, like, exactly like it was on Hysteria, but it was this updated version they could sell, so they're making all the coin off of it. Yeah. So I mean re-recorded albums to me are, I don't mind it, I suppose.
Big fan of Wicked Sensation.
Right. Well, I mean, dude, seriously, like, I mean, we talked a little bit about Testament earlier. First Strike, Still Deadly. That's fucking awesome. So, I mean, that's how to do it. You know, the re-recorded Bonded by Blood, I thought, was pretty damn good. I mean, it was tuned down, so it was, like, heavier. So that was cool. But a lot of these bands, when they do it, you know, Doc and re-recorded their greatest hits, and it, you know, Don was doing that low vocal thing that I'm just not a fan of, and it's
You know, what they should do is re-record the two Blaze Bailey albums, except not have Blaze Bailey on them.
Well, not have the songs either. It's funny. Kale just typed that. He says, "Okay, so we'll take over the Blaze albums instead. Throw Angel and the Gambler off the roof for permanent."
Just throw the entire albums off.
Yeah. Yeah, JG3, he nails it. I was going to bring this up. He says Jeff Tate did that as well when he released Frequency Unknown with his Queensryche. He re-recorded Silent Lucidity, Della Brown, Jet City Woman, and they didn't sound better.
Well, how is Jet City Woman going to sound better? I mean, come on. That's like one of the greatest produced albums of all time, Empire.
Yeah.
You know what I do like? But did you ever hear that version they have of Scarborough Fair? That is cool.
I don't like that song.
Oh, really?
It's not the way they did it. I'm just not a fan of that song.
Oh, good. You know, I love like, that Simon Garfunkel stuff like that with the round in it. But yeah, I thought that was cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of funny because, like, I don't know if this is a re-record, but I really love the last song on Promised Land. Was it Somebody Else or something like that? And it's just him and the piano.
Yeah.
And the piano. And there's an extended version of the record that has a full band version of it. And that song is not very good with the full band. I mean, it really takes something away from it. Like, there's something about this, the feel of this, the solo piano and vocal, that is really, really great. And the full electric version just, it strips it of that. And you're just like, eh. So, you know.
Brian's trying to say forgettable. What am I trying to say?
Yeah.
About Scarborough Fair? Is that what he's talking about?
Yeah. It could be. So, well, man, this was fun. And we've got more of this stuff coming. We still have to figure out the Metallica debate. You know, are we gonna cage match Justice versus Master of Puppets? Are we gonna do a deep dive?
Did figure out our next concept album, though, as we discussed before. It will be Ludacris Chicken and Beer. Very extremely deep album. About both chicken and beer.
Which came first, the chicken or the beer?
Exactly.
Oh, my Lord.
No, this was fun, man. Yeah, I'm looking forward to we've got some good stuff behind the scenes we're talking about doing. So there's,
yeah,
you guys have ones, you know, shoot us, drop us a line on our, you know, on our Twitter or our Facebook. Let us know. We'll come up with some.
Yep.
But yeah, we got a couple good ones brewing here. I'm excited about.
Yeah, like I said, June 25th, we got a very special episode coming up. That's a Saturday, so it'll be 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So that's going to be a special episode. You guys do not want to miss. That's going to be really, really cool. We'll have some more details as that gets closer.
Are we doing another fan party? I use the word fan like they're really fans of ours.
Yeah, I have to get that on the calendar because my summers are insanely busy on Fridays and Saturdays with the cover band I sing for. So
go ahead, promote your cover band too. You've already been doing your solo.
Well, I have to have a legitimate excuse. It's not like, oh, I don't have a lot of Fridays and Saturdays because I'm, you know, I sit in my man cave diddling myself all night. Like, it's not that. Like, I actually have things I'm doing.
I don't sit on here promote stuff. June 4th, dueling pianos at the Boot in Geneva, Ohio, 7 to 10 p.m. Tickets are $15.
There you go. Man, $15 to watch you?
I know. Wow. When I saw that, I was like,
all right, what's the
scary things. Go ahead.
What is a worse deal? $5,000 for the Kiss meet and greet or $15 to see you play piano and sing? if that's not a low blow, I don't know what is.
Yeah, it's close. I don't know. $700 to watch, to see if Vinnie Vincent shows up.
Oh, my God. All right, yeah, that takes the cake.
Play.
Yeah. Look at the JG3 says they're called the Talking Into Infinity Groupies. Oh, that's hilarious, man. Oh, my God. Yeah, but if you guys have show ideas, like Brian said, just, you know, you can hit us up on Twitter, which is @TIIDT Podcast. just go to our Facebook page. You can shoot us an email directly, talkingintoinfinity@gmail.com. Don't forget, we are here every other Thursday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Facebook, YouTube, talkingintoinfinity.com, and the CMSnetwork.com. And if you are watching on YouTube, just click that like and subscribe button so you get notified every time we go live. Because, again, we do special shows every here and there, so you don't want to miss those. And, Brian, to close the show, to answer your question, yes, we are going to do another fan hangout pretty soon. I'm going to get that on my calendar, and I'm going to promote that for a couple months so that everybody knows when it is. And the biggest burning question on everyone's mind, since I am talking about a fan hangout, yes, I will be imbibing in gorilla farts yet again. So,
and I'm going to debut Brian's bartender tips. You'll get to see my cocktail concoctions.
how to get ripped on $5.42. Yeah.
Oh, wait, hey, whoa, easy. $4.
you're not gonna be a big spender for that episode.
No, I'm gonna have a couple different options, but yeah, I try to keep it under $5 easily.
So Kale says he'll pay $15 to see you if you pay for his flight.
Dude, if it was like a domestic flight, I would totally do it, man. I would love for you to come up and hang out, but I don't know if I can sport Australia.
That is the biggest lie I've ever heard. You pinch nickels harder than anybody I've ever met.
I would pay for Kale to come if it was, you know, reasonable, but I don't know what it costs to fly a kangaroo from Austria. Kangaroo Airlines or whatever they do over there in Austria.
Oh my God, so bad. Well, anyways, guys, thanks for checking out another episode. Hopefully you guys had a good time with this one. I know Brian and I had a blast talking about a band that influenced Dream Theater and a record that influenced one of their best records. So JG3, Kale McLeish, Robert Husted, Robert Reams, Joseph Wren, Sarcasmo, Assholio, all you guys, be cool or be podcast out. Thanks again for checking out the show. And we will see you guys in 2 weeks. It will be Thursday, May 19th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So until then, carpe diem.